You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I'm your host, Keith Martin. This week on the Corrections Connection, we are looking at workforce partnerships in corrections that prepare offenders for employment upon their release. Today we are joined by Eric Selesnow, Director of the Division of Workforce Investment Services for the Montgomery County, Maryland, Department of Economic Development. Mr. Selesnow is the Director of the Montgomery County Workforce Investment Board, where he administers federal workforce programs and oversees two one-stop employment centers. Prior to this, Mr. Selesnow spent over 20 years working in local and state correction systems. Mr. Selesnow is also a co-founder and past chairperson of the Employment and Training Advocacy Network and active in both local and national workforce development issues. Welcome to today's live talk, Mr. Selesnow.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Great. Now, for those of us who don't know you and your career, let's talk about your career and kind of how you made the shift from corrections to now get into workforce development. And it's kind of a unique shift, isn't it?
Well, it was for me, that's for sure. I spent about 24, 25 years in various correctional facilities and systems, in a state prison system, and then in a local county corrections and a work release center, more specifically. So I did that for many years, and started working with offenders as they transitioned out to employment in the community, and that's really where I work with employers every day and offenders every day, and really took a liking to that. So did that for, you know, 24 years just about, and then an opportunity came up in the workforce development system here locally. I had served on the board of the local workforce investment board as my role as a corrections employment specialist, and then after there was some opportunity presented itself, and I was able to transfer from the Department of Corrections over to our Department of Economic Development, and now I lead the local workforce board. So it's, you know, in many senses, it's a logical step. Mm-hmm. In another way, it's very different because, you know, the criminal justice and workforce systems are two very separate sort of systems.
Definitely, and we will get into that during our live talk today. Let's start by talking about how local workforce systems operate and maybe the impact of the Workforce Investment Act of 1998 and how that plays a role.
Sure, and a lot of that, you know, I've been in corrections for so many years, I kind of knew of the unemployment system and the workforce system and Job Training Partnership Act, and then I knew this new WIA thing, this Workforce Investment Act, was coming, but I didn't know all that much about it except sort of broad brush. And, you know, the local workforce systems have gone through a major change over the last 2 years in this country since July of 2000. And every community in this country, or at least every local workforce area, which is just about every community, there is a local workforce investment system, a local workforce investment board, and local one-stop employment centers. And that's a big change from how it was prior to that. And, you know, the local workforce systems are supposed to have universal access to every citizen, and you're supposed to be able to get a lot of different services at those one-stop centers across the country, and you usually can. It's everything from basic services, everything from getting filling out a resume, to searching job data banks, to getting more intensive career counseling and assessment, to getting job placement assistance, and even getting funds for training and subsequent employment in a demand-driven occupation. So, there's really, you know, Keith, there's just so many things going on in these local communities, in the local workforce systems, that a lot of folks in correction systems across the country aren't fully aware of. Mm-hmm. Some of us are, and some people in corrections have made some great collaborations and great connections with their local workforce systems and their local one-stop centers. A lot of areas, they're two different systems, and they don't really communicate with each other, so I think that's some of the challenge to folks in corrections.
Mm, that's a good point, and with that in mind, what are the benefits of correctional agencies partnering with local workforce investment programs and one-stops, and then more specifically, what can they gain? What can corrections and the offender both gain?
Well, the benefits, we in corrections, or sorry, I'm not in corrections anymore, so I'll say you all in corrections out there that are listening, you know, many times we have to reinvent the wheel or begin ourselves saying, oh gosh, you know, we think employment of these guys is important or these men and women is important. How do we do that? And, you know, sometimes we'll just say, okay, get out and call this number, or, you know, go to this nonprofit or go to this church faith-based group or, you know, sometimes we'll make some attempts in corrections ourselves to create some sort of employment, you know, whether it's in some sort of employment transition programs. And of course, you know, we have jail industries and we have corrections education and prison industries and all these things where people in corrections can get access to training or, you know, education skills to develop themselves. But the weakness here, Keith, is when people then transition to the community, and with all this talk of reentry, of course it's important. You know, us people in corrections sometimes don't always know where to tell our clients to go or how to get services. It's the same thing in probation and parole. So the benefits are is that this local one-stop service system is already an existing infrastructure in most communities throughout the country. I will say many one-stops are, some one-stops are very good at working with offenders, others are not. And so I think the benefits are, I think it's a two-way street. I think the one-stop employment system can benefit from some of our knowledge as correctional practitioners going in and partnering with them. And I think they've got some services to offer our clients that prior to this they haven't had. So I think, you know, you can, if you're smart in your local area, you should be going and talking to your local one-stop workforce director, and they're called different things in different locations
right.
around the country, but, you know, work skills centers or workforce centers or one-stop centers. But, you know, there should be no reason why corrections folks can't go knocking on the door over there and say, hey, let's sit down and work out something.
Yeah.
All people, it's, you know, universal access. So it's everybody from welfare to work, an offender, somebody with a disability can get services there, and it also serves, you know, other people in the community, the person who's been laid off from a high-tech job or a biotech job. So it's a very diverse place with a lot of different services available there. And, you know, the whole idea of the one-stop system is that people in their community, it doesn't matter whether they're an offender or not, just people who live there, and offenders are people who live there,
right.
can get a wide range of services at this one-stop. So there's benefits because now corrections have kind of an end resource in which they can send their people to. Now, it's not all, it doesn't solve all the problems
right.
in the world, but if you're a probation officer, parole agent, or a correctional transition person, you know, developing a relationship has some real benefits.
And in terms of developing that relationship, what are some keys that you can offer to create and foster these relationships and get the ball rolling?
Well, every community has a local workforce investment board. So I would, you know, suggest to people to go. Their public meetings are held either monthly or quarterly or every other monthly in their community. And, you know, most times you can find it by clicking workforce in your home community, and you'll get connected to it somehow. But to go to the local workforce board meetings or to get to know somebody on the local workforce investment board and make sure they get this issue on their radar screen. Some communities, you know, are specifically targeting offenders as a group of people they want to serve.
Right.
And so, you know, the board has to buy into that. So sometimes you might have to educate your board. Sometimes, you know, I always say to people in corrections, hey, you know, we have to be at the table. So let's go get on the board of the local workforce boards, and maybe we can be members on those boards and help influence that policy. You can also just, as I said, you know, go to the director of the one-stop and say, hey, you know, we've got some clients here who need services. How do we work something out? There's also some advantages there to the local one-stop centers, too, because we have certain requirements, certain streams of funding, certain types of people we need to serve, laid-off workers, dislocated workers, youth, older youth. Youthful offenders would fit into that category, for example, and then adult low income. So many of our clients are eligible for some of the federal funds that come into the one-stop centers, and sometimes one-stop centers can't always find the right cohort of clients to serve, so many times corrections clients are really some folks that they like to serve in there. They just often don't have the skill sets to deal with maybe the offender personality, addictions, mental health, some of the offender manipulation that might happen, and that's where we can come and help train them and partner with them.
Great. Now, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Eric Selesnow of the Montgomery County Department of Economic Development, and we're talking about workforce partnerships and corrections. Now, we've established that the relationships and the partnerships are beneficial to both sides. Now, let's turn to the offender side. Are there specific areas of employment that are ideal for workforce partnerships? Are there more areas that are more prevalent across the nation?
Well, yes, a position that is good for the offender and good for the community, and they have to be both. You know, we all know in this field that offenders you know, are a wide range of people with various skills, interests, education, background, dangerousness levels, and what have you. And I think, you know, people often say, oh, well, let's find a field that we'll hire, we'll dump all our offenders in that field. And the real world doesn't really work that way.
Right.
I've contended for many years, Keith, that the way to do this is, you know, we do it a couple of people at a time, one person at a time, one placement at a time, one business at a time. It's just such a diverse group of people, as I said, with different skills and skill sets and interests. So I always think it's important that, you know, the test, what we do with offenders is that we're getting them directed toward jobs that are consistent with their criminal record charge. So in other words, you know, sex offenders, we do not want to put in positions that they're around children or unsupervised or, you know, have keys to apartment buildings or things like that. You know, people with alcohol problems should not be working in bars. People with substance abuse problems are probably somebody we're not going to want to put in a healthcare facility.
Mm-hmm.
And at least until they're out and recovered and on solid ground. I mean, some of the mistakes that I think we make in corrections, or I know I made in corrections anyway, was in the pressure to get somebody placed in a job real quick, sometimes we would just throw them into a job.
Right.
And that's not what you want to do. You want to, really the test is, you know, does it meet the offender's needs in terms of the type of job and the money that they're getting paid? Does it meet the employer's needs for the skilled person? Does it meet the probation needs or parole needs of the person in terms of going to AA meetings or going to report to their probation? Does it fit in there? And finally, does it fit into the community's needs for safety? And, you know, are we putting somebody in a job that will reduce their ability to reoffend and to re-victimize someone in our community? And that really should be our guide. And, you know, oftentimes we in corrections know these sort of things. And think about that. And often people, some of the nonprofits or other organizations we sometimes partner with are not offender experts. So if you ever work with an agency where they're a employment expert and you're the offender expert, you guys might want to get together and share some of your knowledge so you can train their staff and best on how to best deal with offenders. Not sure I answered your question.
No, you did. That's good advice. No, well, what I think you're saying is it doesn't matter the area, whether they're a plumber, a welder, or what have you, as long as the skills are matched and what the offender needs and what the community needs are all matched.
Right, and of course, as we all know, and I'll just for the sake of being redundant because it's an important point, we don't want to prepare or train or place people in jobs where it's not a demand occupation. So, you know, if you don't need welders in your town, don't train somebody in welding.
Right.
You know? And the one-stop centers can really help give you some of that information on what jobs are in demand. So, you know, if you're a program minimum security and you're doing some light training with people or doing some career counseling, you want to counsel them into the fields where they're doing the hiring and paying the decent wages. You just don't want to prep them for a job. Even though it may be their interest, you don't want to prep them for a job that's not going to be there.
That's a good point.
And you know, really, I'm okay with, you know, finding fields that are friendly to offenders, and you know, during the labor shortage of the 90s and early 2000, you know, anybody and everybody was hiring offenders because there was a labor shortage, and things have tightened up quite a bit in our economy. We have to be smarter. We have to be a little bit more targeted in how we prepare our offenders. It's going to be a little bit more difficult for them to find jobs because the economy's tightened up a little bit. So it really takes a lot of matching, I think, to get the person the right job and you know, not just throwing people into jobs because you have a job, you have a body, and you put it together.
Right. Now, drawing from your experience in corrections, again, going back to over 20 years, can you discuss some examples of successful partnerships that you were aware of?
Well, I've had the fortunate opportunity to deal with a lot of people across the country in some corrections programs, and there are a lot of really great programs going on out there that connect offenders to employment in the community, and the National Institute of Corrections Office of Correctional Job Training and Placement has a heartbeat on some of those programs. But mostly what it's focused on is really common sense programs, people who are creative, and most of these partnerships really are started through relationships. And it's somebody in a corrections agency who is motivated and energized and believes that employment of offenders is important. I mean, face it, you know, if you get an offender working, you know, from 5 in the morning. They got to get up, go to, be at, and then come home from work. Mm-hmm. You know, if they get up at 5 in the morning, get home 5 in the afternoon, that's 12 hours a day that, you know, they're not out there selling drugs or committing new offenses. And I think, you know, that's a good thing for probation officers, certainly. But you need somebody who's committed, somebody who's interested, and it's about developing a relationship with that community agency. And whether you need to talk your boss into it or it's something that comes down from your boss or your warden or your director, it's all about developing that relationship in the community and get them to understand that, hey, no matter what, these folks are part of the community, they're returning to the community, and do we want to invest in getting them working or do we just want them, you know, running around without work and without supervision? And I think most people, and it's under explained to them at the community organizations, and especially in the business community, they understand that. You know, work is... You know, it structures people's lives. It gives them an anchor. It gives them a way to pay child support and take care of themselves. And, you know, that's the piece that I think needs to be explained to people, and from that you develop a relationship.
Good.
In terms of some very creative partnerships out there, I mean, you know, Washington State has done some great things with a program called Corrections Clearinghouse.
Right.
New York City has done things. Montgomery County here is a fantastic pre-release center. That really does some intensive work with everything from life skills and substance abuse treatment to relapse prevention to job placement and job retention. And, you know, there's, you know, Safer Foundation in Chicago. There's mm-hmm. just a lot of, and then, you know, there's smaller programs that operate in counties. And some of the best ones I've seen are just, you know, somebody over at one-stop center and somebody at the local county jail met at a networking event. They got friendly, they got talking, and they said, well, look, how about if you come in and teach a class to my group once a week, and then they'll come and see you when they hit the street.
Yeah.
I know that has been very successful with us. When I came to supervise the one-stop system here in Montgomery County, there was a grant we had in corrections, and essentially it was a federally funded small grant just to hire somebody in the one-stop as an offender employment specialist. And, you know, that's all it took. So this person goes into our jail 1 or 2 days a week, does some job readiness, makes a linkage with the men and women in the jail, in this community, so when pass the card around, directions, resumes, all that stuff, and when they get out, they now have a contact, they now have a place to go, they now have somebody who is a friendly face, because let's face it, a lot of these offenders in the job market, they're all worried about their conviction and explaining it, so if they
right.
can find somebody in the community who understands that,
already,
it's helpful
yeah.
for the offenders. And mostly it's, you know, those little sort of partnerships and relationships that start locally that are really effective. And that's why I encourage anybody who's participating in your program today, Keith, to, you know, start small. Start something small with either a local one-stop center or any other nonprofit community agency or any agency that does employment training work. And, you know, that's how some of the best partnerships start.
Fantastic.
Too many people try to start these mega programs, these really large programs.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really, I think, the best just to try something small and try to get it right before you expand it.
That is fantastic advice for our audience. And that is how we will wrap up today's live talk. Again, thank you to Eric Selesnow. He is the Director of the Division of Workforce Investment Services for the Montgomery County, Maryland Department of Economic Development. Eric, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And thank you to our audience as well. Now, for more information on workforce partnerships and corrections, be sure to read this week's articles on corrections.com. And for CCNN, I'm Keith Martin.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.